Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 2:36 p.m., and that is Central Time. Today is April 20th. The Dividend Aristocrats were up in a reasonably dynamic manner today and followed through on strength throughout this week, and coming back up towards the upper side of the range. And certainly, this has been confirmed support in the region of the 200-day moving average. So, investors are worried about inflation. And they're thinking about how they can protect themselves against it. And one of the ways to do that is to bet on companies that have got a long history of rewarding faith in their business models. So Dividend Aristocrats are the S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats are those that have been raising their dividend every year for the last 25. Now, they don't generally tend to have high yields because the price advances tend to keep those yields compressed. But it's the dividend growth is one of the primary reasons why investors are willing to buy the shares, because they've got strong business models that have stood the test of time. They generally have strong global franchises, so they benefit from the rise of the global middle class, and we are going to have an additional 2 billion people in the world over the course of the next 20 years. And they also benefit from buying technology. And one of the there, I guess there are two ways to invest in technology. The first is to try and identify those that are, in fact, inventing brand new products, methods, or business practices. The alternative would be to invest in the companies that benefit most from deploying those solutions. So the Dividend Aristocrats fall into that category. But what I found interesting today is that we've seen some rather divergent price action. So if we look at the Dow Jones Industrials average, it was up in a similar manner to the Dividend Aristocrats. And of course, it's a blue chip index. So it has its constituents have many of the same characteristics as the Dividend Aristocrats, except for the fact that the Dow Jones is a price-weighted index, and it's got quite a number of technology companies in there, like Apple and Microsoft. But IBM was one of those shares that fits into both categories, and it surprised on the upside in here today with earnings. So it hasn't been a particularly well-rewarding share over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, and that's discounting the fact that it's been trending downwards for most of the last decade. But this does look like a base formation. So if we can follow through on the upside and hold it, well, then that's going to be a clear change of trend. At the other end of the spectrum, you have Netflix. And I think investors or subscribers will be well aware of the low opinion I have of Netflix. And the share is down from 700 to 200 and change in the space of 4.5 months, so or I guess 5 months at this stage. So this is a really profound decline, and at least the valuation is much improved, and the bonds are still trading at a premium of 106 cents. So there's still scope for it to even come back and trade at par. And the challenge here is that they grew, and the benefit of the doubt was given to Netflix that they'd be able to grow indefinitely. They'd be have access to cheap liquidity to do with whatever they wanted in terms of producing shows. The big challenge, of course, is that in order to come up with shows, Netflix relied on an algorithm. And the result was that every one of their shows was practically identical. And then I got greater insight into that when I was in Saudi Arabia and I met I guess he's the producer of the first Arabic language show that hit Netflix, and they had to reshoot half it in order to comply with the way that the algorithm wants shows to be shot. In other words, they wanted to make this show exactly the same as every other. And that's not inspiring for customers because when you've seen one show, you've basically seen them all. And they've lost several hundred thousand subscribers in this quarter. They expect to lose another 2 million in the next quarter. Of course, they'll still have lots of other people still paying their premiums, but they're going to start, or at least they're talking about showing ads. And one of the primary reasons that people want a streaming service is so they don't have to watch ads. They certainly don't want to have to pay to watch ads. And then they're also talking about clamping down and sharing passwords. And they're also talking about spending less money on new shows. So not only are the shows they produce basically very alike, but they're going to produce fewer of them. This is obviously an attempt to try and stem the flow of money out the door and return to some kind of profitability. And it is accelerating lower. So it's quite likely that we're approaching a bottom for Netflix. It might be a decade, it might be 20 years before we get back to $700. Or we're going to have to see a massive reversal in the contraction of central bank balance sheets in just 2 months. And this is before the Federal Reserve has begun its quantitative easing program. The total assets of central banks has contracted by $1 trillion. So this is a big removal of liquidity. Now there's two main factors that have contributed to this contraction. The first is that the Fed stopped buying bonds, and then the Bank of Japan and China and Europe might be still adding to their balance sheets, but it's not enough to compensate for the loss of the Federal Reserve buying bonds. But then on top of that, you have the dollar has been really very firm. And because this is a rebased chart, the strength of the dollar has been a significant headwind to global liquidity. So financial conditions have been tightening up on a global basis as well as a local basis. Now, the dollar index is right in the region of 100, and it's been certainly strengthening over the course of the last few months and the last year. But 100 is a big psychological level, and at every time it's got up to this region, in the last 6.5 years, it's failed. So it's not unreasonable to anticipate that we might at least get some consolidation in this area. But we would really need to see a clear sign that the Federal Reserve is not going to continue to raise rates or reduce the size of its balance sheet. Or perhaps and reduce the size of its balance sheet in order to really demonstrate that the dollar is peaking. And I think this just looks like some consolidation. And one of the reasons why I think it's just some consolidation is the renminbi is continuing to weaken. So this is a meaningful breakdown. And the renminbi is now weakening through the 200-day moving average. So we can see here the dollar is completing its base formation. There's certainly the potential that the renminbi is going to at least weaken back up towards the upper side of the range, or the dollar is going to strengthen to the upper side of the range. The CSI 300 remains under pressure, and it was in negative territory in here today. So continued weakness in the stock market is going to promote additional efforts to support the economy. And the Chinese banking sector has also been weakening. So there's certainly a need to continue to support the economy. Now, the banks sector hasn't really gone anywhere for 6 years either, but it is now pulling back again from the region of the 200-day moving average and the 1,000-day moving average. Any sustained move below the 1,000-day moving average hasn't been sustained for more than about a month. So we would anticipate that at the 14,000 level should offer support for the banks index. And in the absence of that, we would have to start being, I think, much more bearish of the outlook for China. And of course, that would put additional downward pressure on the renminbi. There is just no way that they can support the renminbi and the economy at the same time, because they're going to have to start wading in and supporting the property market. The private portion of the property market is rapidly going to be subsumed into the state-owned property developer portion of the market. And the Shanghai Property Index, having rebounded impressively, was down in a dynamic manner in here this week. So, one thing that I find rather interesting is there has been a cacophony of people willing to write off the dollar and implying that the dollar is about to be destroyed as a safe haven asset because Russia and China are going to team up together and create a super currency union that will threaten the petrodollar system. And it's a possibility. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility that something like that might happen. But one would have to question whether it's possible if the renminbi continues to weaken. What is unfortunate, for China at least, is that this opportunity is arising at exactly the wrong time for them. Now, it might be in Russia's interests to completely create disillusionment within Europe and to try and foster relationships with its growth markets rather than its legacy markets. But it's not in China's interests in the short term, because they are facing some significant economic damage from the response to the coronavirus. Despite the fact that they're probably dealing with a mix of the Omicron or the Delta variants, and that didn't really result in a big jump in hospitalizations around the world. And even in China right now, they're getting a lot more cases than hospitalizations. And of course, there's lots of stories about people being turned away from hospitals and routine care being denied to people, so that there's a lot more people dying from non-COVID cases than from COVID cases. But the reality is that China is politically driven, and the politicians in China really don't care about anything other than ensuring that they can hold on to power through the Party Congress, and that's not until September. So it's quite likely that we're going to have to see stimulus, because without it, there's going to be a rout. And the last thing that the administration wants is there to be a rout. So that's going to support the outlook for liquidity. Now, we also started to see here that the dollar might be pausing on a dollar index basis, but it's also starting to ease back against the yen, but not in a dynamic manner. And the yen is very oversold. So it's not at all beyond the bounds possibility that we get a little pause. But the Bank of Japan was intervening in the bond markets again today, so they continue to defend this 25 basis point level. And this is going to be a big question. How weak will the yen get if they have to continue to defend the 25 basis point area? Because despite the fact that it didn't hold the move, it didn't close below the 25 cent, basis point area either. And it suggests that there's going to have to be additional bond buying to achieve the goals that they've stated they want. And 10-year yields were also in negative territory today. So we certainly have very oversold conditions in bonds, a short-term overbought condition in the dollar. We're starting to see that investors are more interested today in looking for a safe haven in the form of dividend-paying stocks with strong balance sheets and global franchises, rather than focusing on the technology sector. because the technology sector doesn't do especially well in an environment where there's quantitative tightening. Now, over the course of the next week, we're going to have earnings from both Tesla tonight and Amazon next week. Well, Tesla announced yesterday that they're going to stop supplying purchasers of their cars with some of the charging equipment. And that's a ra well, it appears at least to be a rather desperate move to conserve capital. And we have two lower highs here on the Tesla chart, and it's pulling back again towards the region of the 200-day moving average. This is not a consistent trend. And then we can think about Amazon. Well, Amazon was in negative territory today. It had a lengthy range from the middle of 2020 through to the end of 2021. We have a number of failed upside breaks, a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It's now encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's got a lot of work to do still in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So some of the largest companies in the world are struggling, but there are plenty of others that have had very significant declines. Then, of course, we should continue to keep an eye on the performance of high-yield bonds. So we've had a modest steadying here in the region of 80 on the HYG ETF, which is around the region of the lows from back in 2018. Now, when we look at high yield spreads, well, every time they go above 500 basis points, it's generally co co or it does generally coincide with strife in stock markets. So the spread has got up to the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's paused. So high yield bonds are not falling as fast, or faster, I should say, than at treasuries. It's pretty much about the same right now. I do think that there's the potential here that we're going to get a rebound in bonds, simply because if we do get any kind of slowdown in growth, then it's going to have a knock-on effect for the bond market and the expectation for interest rate hikes, and that should then create some demand. But we have a lot of moving parts, and we have a Chinese economy that is locking down, and there's a massive queue of ships outside Shanghai, which is one of the nation's busiest ports. So supply chain bottlenecks are going to continue to remain problematic for both finished goods and components coming out of China. And then, of course, we have there's a shortage of paint in the USA right now. My contractors were looking to paint the new stairs they've just built. They had to paint with water-based paints because they can't buy oil-based paints for love nor money. They're just not available. So these examples of supply chain bottlenecks remain very much a factor. Now, when we think about oil prices, well, we've been pulling back again in here today, coming towards the $100 area once more. And this is a second lower high. And we're still somewhat overbought relative to the 200-day moving average. But we've had a profound move. Going from 20 to 140 in the space of 2 years is a very significant advance, and there is absolutely no question that it accelerated. So it is likely that we've seen a peak of near-term, potentially medium-term significance. And then the only question is, how much is the price going to come down before we have evidence of support being found? Natural gas prices, having surged into the end of last week, are also starting to come back down. Lumber was almost limit up in here today because it's already been pulling back, so it's starting to begin to offer some support. As the dollar starts to ease, then commodity-related currencies are starting to do better. So the Australian dollar was up in a dynamic manner in here today. Then I thought it was interesting that it was the healthcare sector was really making all the running about 5 years ago, and Ramsay Healthcare hasn't done anything since 2016, but the offer to buy it out from, I believe it was Apollo, if my memory is serving me, that has resulted in a pop on the upside. KKR, excuse me. So we're definitely seeing that private equity companies are still active in purchasing, and there's plenty of dry powder around, and they're looking at cash flows. So KKR had a significant downtrend, but then it had a low with an upside weekly key reversal, and today's action could potentially be a higher reaction low. So we might be in the process of putting in some support. The other, I think, big development in here today was the move we had in carbon prices. So this was a big rebound, and I tend to think that carbon prices offer bond-like characteristics. So any time we've had a big drawdown, we've had governments riding to the rescue, and that's exactly what happened in here today. The European Commission voted to double the pace with which they're capping carbon emissions in the Eurozone. So that resulted in a rather significant jump in carbon prices. So they're not going to go to zero. They have the potential for capital appreciation, or they don't pay a yield. But they're going to have overt government support anytime the price comes down. So you have governments like the UK talking about putting in subsea cables to bring solar energy from North Africa all the way up to the British Isles. And the company doing that is also talking about building a second one to bring it up into the Benelux region. Now, this talk of putting solar panels in North Africa has been circulating for at least 5 or 6 years. Nobody has really wanted to do it because the technology wasn't there to transport the electricity effectively. But on top of that, there was a reticence to substitute reliance on Middle Eastern oil with North African solar. So they didn't want to just become beholden to a new despotic regime. But the reality is that being beholden to Russia, it doesn't matter how bad it gets in North Africa, they don't have nuclear weapons. They're not going to invade the mainland of Europe. So at least on a scale of threats, it's not quite as dire as what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. But obviously then it begs the question, how are these extraordinarily ambitious new energy projects going to be funded? So that comes back down to carbon, because governments are broke. They don't have the ability to just go off and borrow tons of money for these objective or for these projects. It's more likely that it'll be a public part private partnership. And they'll just, for example, with the UK, it's the company that's building these subsea cables is asking for just an offtake agreement. And it will be these kinds of government contracts will help to raise the cash necessary, and its carbon emission pricing will ensure that they're profitable and that they do, in fact, get built. So simply ensuring that carbon pricing remains high will be directly supportive of the efforts of these companies to raise money. It's basically creating a market for non-fossil fuel solutions. So all we really should be paying attention to is carbon pricing as long as it remains high, then there will be ready access to capital and market supports for ambitious projects. And that's probably true regardless of what happens to interest rates, because creating resilient solutions that are, I think, resilient primarily to despotic regimes, well, that's a national priority, and it's going to supersede any major concerns about inflation in the short term. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.